Book online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-566-7906 now for your free reputation analysis. Our dedicated experts and patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-566-7906 to learn more or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Welcome back to Coastal Daybreak. You're listening to The Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And now more Coastal Daybreak.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak. Let's take a look at that weather forecast as you step out the door here today. We're looking for a partly sunny day today, mostly cloudy with a low and a high of 85, mostly cloudy tonight, low 69, and 50% chance of rain for tomorrow with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 83 degrees. Today probably the warmest day of the remaining days of the week. And showers and thunderstorms could hold into Thursday morning. It's a slight chance of that, but otherwise it'll be partly sunny and stay that way through Saturday. Good chance of rain, though, Saturday night going through Memorial Day Monday. Southwesterly winds at 10 to 15 knots offshore. Seas about 2 to 4 feet. And we're looking at temperatures right now at 73 degrees down east and at Cherry Point and at Bogfield, 70 degrees in New Bern. Winds are either calm or out of the west and southwest at 3 to 5 miles an hour, 71 degrees in Jacksonville and 70 degrees in Richlands this morning.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's talk legal with Harvell & Collins, the right advice at the right time, and they are both in the studio here today, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good to have you with us here today.
Glad to be here.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to talk about some aspects, if you will, of the discovery process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good place to start is just to define that word. I mean, what an interesting word for a lawyer to be talking about, the word discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Discovery is a process, if you will, during the course of litigation.
Mm-hmm.
Where the lawyers, on behalf of their clients, of course, are able to request
mm-hmm.
certain information. Maybe it's documents,
right?
Testimony in the form of a deposition, questions to the adverse party in the form of what are called interrogatories.
Mm-hmm.
This is all. These are the tools of the trade of a litigator to be able to hone in. And more tightly define the
mm-hmm.
issues so that there are not a lot of surprises at the trial of the case, or also to be able to discern just all of the information, you know, the documents that
right.
are relative to the dispute,
right.
the testimony of the witnesses and what they're going to say and what they're not going to affirm and what they're going to ratify and what they're not going to agree with. We need to know this before we get to the trial,
right.
for heaven's sakes.
Right.
Certain questions, certain admissions, if you will, to narrow the focus. I mean, it might be that the parties can agree
mm-hmm.
that the document is a valid document and that it was signed by the adverse party, but yet there's a provision in it that we've got a problem with. That might be what might be called a request for an admission.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, and then I'm going to kind of hand it over to our resident litigator here, but the bottom line is that discovery is the process of receiving and assimilating
mm-hmm.
valid information so as to more define the issues that will then be before the court. And the types of discovery are depositions of witnesses and parties,
mm-hmm.
request for admissions of certain factual things,
right.
requests for documentation, and what might be and then interrogatories.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was just doing a little math in my head, some probably more than 750 shows ago. You described it for us, you both described it, and I think very well, as a funnel. As you're trying to get the information, by the time you get to trial, you're down to the necessary things, and the judge certainly likes that.
Right.
So that you, by the time you're actually in court, you've defined some things, but you just start with a pretty broad funnel at first, right?
Yeah, no question, Ben. And you know, when you talk about the funnel, there's a difference between things being discoverable and things being admissible.
Mm-hmm.
The law allows you a pretty broad end of the funnel when we're talking about what's discoverable.
Right.
The standard being, is the thing that you're requesting reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the buzzword that you deal with when you're arguing this before a superior court judge, or the buzz phrase. So you can start fairly broadly, and then as we go through the litigation, we narrow it down to things that are relevant to mm-hmm. the particular issue.
I would imagine that a lot of defendants don't like that. That broad application, do they?
No, they don't. And you know, it's interesting that you know Cecil and I are so busy. You know, just I've been out of office a lot lately, running to this court and that court and this deposition, that deposition. You know, sometimes we show up here 5 minutes before
start,
and we
first
talk
time
about,
you've
okay,
seen each other.
we need to talk about our topic. And the reason this topic is here today is because I was yesterday in Superior Court in the central part of the state in just a case that took me there. And there were multiple issues before the Superior Court judge there, but one of them was a motion to compel mm-hmm. discovery mm-hmm. under Rule 37. So a description of this discovery process and what led us to this motion to compel mm-hmm. is, I think, a good topic. We've talked about it before a little bit, but I think we can talk about it in the context of even this case in general that I mm-hmm. was in court on yesterday. Now, in that particular case, this is a case about a situation where the house, the general contractor, didn't do a good job building the house.
Right.
And it was a flat fee contract. So we were in a situation where we agreed to pay X amount of dollars, and Mr. Contractor, you have to build this as per the plans and specs.
Right.
That's
right.
The way it is. Not a cost plus 15%, 20%, mm-hmm. 12%, anything like that. It's not, you know, you pay the materials and an hourly rate. It's nothing like that. It's just flat fee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened in that particular case was a general contractor apparently ran out of money. So the owner of the property had paid the full contract amount, but didn't get his product,
yeah.
didn't get the thing built. So it appears to us that what happened is the general contractor misused our money,
mm-hmm.
That he used our money on other people's projects.
And so that's what you have to try to discover.
That's right. He and basically made representations to us that, okay, I need to pay for example, the HVAC contractor mm-hmm. and, you know, I need a deposit of $12,000, but then the $12,000 would go into the till and then go out to pay for something completely different, maybe even a different job. Now you understand, you know, these fraud type arguments. Fraud is usually done in somewhat secrecy, right? We don't do fraud out in front of everybody. So as long as you make the appropriate allegations in the complaint when you file the lawsuit, mm-hmm. you know, basically saying, you know, upon information and belief, there was a misuse of our funds. We believe that because the fact that this is a flat fee contract, you ran out of money, you know, these type of things. With particularity, you have to be particular about mm-hmm. it. Then that opens the door to you being able to get the discovery on that issue. If you don't make those allegations, then you can't get the discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can't put the cart before the horse. You have to do it in the right order.
But I think this is probably the area of the law that will surprise some people, is that basically that discovery is granted, is allows someone to peek into what would normally be some pretty private documents, right?
That's exactly right.
Well, let's say one more thing, Ben, just make sure that our listeners fully understand. I mean, you can't have discovery
mm-hmm.
unless there's been the filing of a lawsuit.
Right,
right.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, we lawyers can write a letter to the adverse party
mm-hmm.
and say, you know, will you voluntarily give us the banking records? Will mm-hmm. you give us, you know, the corporate record? Will you give us this? Will you give us the document, et cetera, et cetera? We can request it, but you don't have any right to demand it mm-hmm. because a lawsuit has not been filed. Now, once a lawsuit is filed, the game completely changes because now you have the long arm of the court, and that's what Wes is about to explain, that comes in and enforces these discovery rules.
Mm-hmm.
And for the reasons that we stated earlier, there is this funnel, as we've said.
Right.
And the court wants the issues to be better defined and for there to be clarity where there can be,
mm-hmm.
rather than there just being, you know, all over everywhere day in court. We don't want
right,
that.
Right.
Judges don't want that.
No.
So judges want the lawyers to do their job, which is to define the issue, get the documents, and get all of this worked out between you lawyers
mm-hmm.
before you take up our time in the courts relative to your dispute. So once the lawsuit is filed, we now have the right to request documents, make interrogatories, request
mm-hmm.
for admissions, and subpoena folks to depositions.
Right. So that brings up probably a number of questions that people may have. And if you would like to call in with your questions, you can reach us at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. We'd be happy to put you on and ask your questions from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And as we do every Tuesday morning, we talk with the folks from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, and we're talking about a special part of litigation.
Right, we're talking about discovery and the process that we go through to mm-hmm. gather information through discovery. You know, I was talking in the context of this case I was dealing with yesterday where the allegation is the general contractor has mm-hmm. misused our money.
So you have to do some forensic work, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you?
We don't have any of the documentation really indicating that when we file a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we paid the full freight on the contract, paid the whole thing, but the guy didn't build the house.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't build the house. Well, he built some of the house, but didn't build it, didn't complete it as per the contract and cut so many corners. There are just multiple problems all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So we know these things and we bring this claim, but you know, when you file your lawsuit, you don't just sit back and wait for them to answer when they file, you know, when you file the lawsuit, because
right.
you know, we've talked about it before. Once you file and get served, folks have 30 days to respond. Normally they get an extension. So there's a 60 day period. You know, a good attorney is going to just right on the heels of filing the lawsuit also serve the written discovery request
mm-hmm.
because there's a 60 day waiting period for that too.
Yeah.
I mean, these things
right.
need to move forward. And also, when you serve your written discovery request, as Cecil mentioned, the interrogatories, request for production of documents, and request for admissions, you need to. This is a point in the file where the attorney really needs to do some studying on what we need to be requesting here.
Right.
This is not boilerplate documents, boilerplate mm-hmm. request. Just send the standard request. No, you need to think about what the particulars are, particular issues in this case. Because, you know, keep in mind, you serve these, you're waiting 60 days for a response.
Right, right.
Well, you don't want to, once you get the response, realize, oh, I should ask this, I should ask that. No, you want it to be complete when you ask the initial questions. So in this particular case that we're dealing with, basically the defendants in this case through their counsel just gave us a little sprinkling of nothing
uh-huh.
On these issues of
right.
basically tracing the money. That's
mm-hmm.
what we're wanting to do. We know we paid you. Where did the money go? Where was it used? We want to trace the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't provide much information. And what you have to do as an attorney, if they don't provide the information, is you have to try to resolve it with what the court refers to as a good faith letter first.
Right.
The court wants to see the attorneys try to work it out first.
Mm-hmm.
Although in many cases, this almost just smacks of gamesmanship. It's not, are you really going to give me everything until the court tells you to?
Right.
Probably not on an issue like this. So after you go through this process of the good faith letter and you're not able to resolve it, then you file your motion to compel. And that's where the rubber hits the road, basically.
Put some teeth into it.
Yeah. You go before the Superior Court judge and make your arguments with regard to what you're entitled to.
There's no doubt the plaintiff has got to be concerned that things are going to disappear. You know, obviously, I mean, that's maybe media movie driven or something Hollywood driven, but I mean, we're all worried that things are going to disappear in that 60 days.
Well, that we want to move as quickly as we can, but we're talking about tracing the money. You know, obviously we can ask questions about providing your general ledger, your QuickBooks, these kind of things to see where the money came in, where it went out, where it was is spent. But we also want to know things, Ben, like what banks did you use?
Right.
Where did the money, because then we can subpoena records from the actual bank.
Yeah.
And cross check what the defendant is telling us as compared to what Wells Fargo produces or First Citizens or whatever bank it may be.
And something on that scale, I would imagine, is going to use banking institutions. It's not like you're doing a car repair where maybe only cash was exchanged.
Well, that's right. Well, we know that, you know, in this case, we know how the money started because we wrote the checks.
Right, right.
Well, I don't think that this general contractor took these checks for $10,000, $8,000, $15,000 to the bank and cashed them. I think he deposited them.
Right.
So
right.
We should be able
there should be a trail.
It should be a trail. So be it as it may, in that particular case, you know, hour-long hearing on these issues because a lot of discussion here, argument from the other side, they've already produced everything, which was totally not true. You know, the judge wants to know what they have produced to go back and forth and back and forth. End of the day, judge requires them to produce everything that we want. We have within 30 days. So now we're at a point where we have a court order. Now, this is a little different because we have a court order that, you know, I will draft now and let the other attorney on the other side see it. Hopefully we'll come to terms with regard to the order. If we don't come to terms with it, then I will send my order and he'll send his order and the judge will pick which one most lines up with what her ruling was. And then if they don't fully comply with the order, within 30 days, then next time I go to court, I'm entitled to get my attorney's fees for having to deal with this headache. So that's under Rule 37. So
see, I think you probably just revealed behind the veil a little bit for what people don't know in terms of demystifying the law. They probably think that the judge writes the order.
Well, the judge is going to read the order and make sure it is consistent with her ruling. But I can tell you, you know, state superior court judges, they don't have clerks that work for them. I mean, we don't.
Really?
No, they don't. I have never seen a superior court judge with a clerk. That's not in the budget. Okay. So they do rely upon the attorneys to do their work, to do the job, you know, that their clients are paying them to do. And it's typical that the attorney, you know, prepares the order, but obviously the judge is going to read it and make sure that there's not something
read
awry
in light
in
of
it.
Their ruling.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
They expect the lawyer to draft, to present to them what I might call, you know, kind of an order, but it's not the order.
Right.
It's a draft.
It's a
proposed order.
Yeah.
And then the judge is going to read it and make sure that it conforms. And of course, as Wes mentioned, any lawyers involved in the case are going to be involved in that process. The evolving, you know, order.
Right.
You know, and there might be some back and forth even at that point in a particular case. There many times is, quite frankly, it seems, some back and forth when the case is complicated, but between the lawyers and the judge. And then there will finally be some finality and there will be a signed order and then clocked in and docketed. And now we have an order.
Okay. All right. We're going to have more to come on this as well, too. If you would like to ask a question, 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674 here on Coastal Daybreak. And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. They're online at harvellandcollins.com. And you can always give them a call for an appointment too at 726-2095. Welcome back here on a Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, talking about discovery. I was asking during the break, can the defendant also, they asked for discovery?
Oh, yeah. All parties have the right to conduct discovery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're a party to the litigation, you have that same right under the rules. So we're at the point now where we have a court order.
Mm-hmm.
The order basically indicates that certain documents have to be produced or things have to be identified. And now the defendant in this particular case is under an obligation to produce these things and answer these questions without objection, within 30 days. Now, in the event that they fully comply with that, that's fine. In the event that they kind of try to skirt around it a little bit, mm-hmm. because you understand, I mean, what we're asking for here is things to prove our fraud claim. They're not really going to want to give us,
right,
you know, information, documentation that's going to trace the money, most likely.
Well, again, the Hollywood version of that is a document dump that you get all kinds of extraneous things.
No question. Get that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But in the event that the party who is compelled to produce the documentation does not do it now, they're playing with fire.
Hmm.
Up to this point,
there's an argument.
Well, there's no argument anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So once you have a court order in place and you don't comply with it, then you have Rule 37 sanctions, which is usually attorney's fees, could be even more. I mean, you can even have your pleadings stricken by mm-hmm. the court. I mean, there's lots of sanctions that can be imposed in the event that you don't fully comply with the order.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get the information. Hopefully we get everything. And then once we have all of that written information that we need, documentation, then we usually go take depositions at that point in time. That's the point where, we set the deposition, sit down with whoever the party is we're deposing or individual we're deposing before a court reporter and take sworn testimony. And obviously it doesn't make sense to do the depositions before you have the documents because you need
right.
to ask about the documents.
Right.
And some of the documents might not be entirely clear. So we're having to clarify those, in the deposition.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. This is a process that, then becomes, even more once you receive the documents, then you do have to go look for that needle in the haystack, right? Sometimes, right?
Sometimes, but if you ask the right questions,
mm-hmm.
and you word them the right way,
mm-hmm.
and your order is drafted correctly for mm-hmm. the judge, the order on the compel, then in many cases, that narrowing down is done at that process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little easier to find the needle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and then what's next?
Well, I think we're about out of time right now, but I would like next week for Wes to continue with regard to being the consequences
mm-hmm.
of
failure?
Discovery.
Yeah.
Not so much the failure, but we now have a deposition.
Right.
We now have requests for admissions.
Mm-hmm.
We now have answers to interrogatories. Okay, good. I'm glad we got them. We didn't have to go through this whole motion to compel and 30-day order and all of that, but we just have them. What are the consequences of that? We're not going to have time today, but depositions are used in a multitude of different ways. They have significant consequences, okay, what people say during a deposition. What is the effect of a request for admission when then a party admits, yes, that is what was said. Yes, that is the document.
Mm-hmm.
What's the effect of that?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good program for us to talk about.
The short answer to that
yes.
is that, and we'll talk about it more mm-hmm. next week, the short answer to that is once you've admitted it, you can't unadmit it.
Right. yeah.
You can't unring the bell. And a lot of times in a deposition, you have to be careful with regard to your written discovery. You might not want to ask a request for admission on something because you don't want the other side and their attorney to work on their answer.
Mm-hmm.
You want to sit across from that person in the deposition and ask the question when they're cold and they don't see it coming.
Right.
So maybe you get the answer you want and then that issue is resolved and that helps your client's case tremendously. So, you know, you got to think through where the case is going
yeah.
before you get to that deposition.
Give us a chance the next week will give us a chance to talk
right.
a little bit about depositions and what your rights are under a deposition
sure.
if you're called
yep.
for one as well.
Right.
Because people don't realize the legal ramification, I think, sometimes of a deposition.
That's correct.
So we'll have more on that next week here. If you want to find out more as well, you want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, you can reach them and find them online at harveallencollins.com. And, of course, you can give them a call and get that appointment, too, at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.